Good morning, everyone. Well, good time, good afternoon. I'm Tim Blake, and I run a company called Songability. The reason for that name is A, that people need to take responsibility for their actions, and the other thing is we have things that overwhelm us, whether we go into emotions or feelings that we can't control. Emotions or feelings that we can't control, and they just come on to us, and then the way our body works is we fill our body with the appropriate chemicals straight away. So I can talk to people and I can see sadness come on, and it comes on like that, and then it's tears and everything else. The body is full of that chemical, that sadness chemical. I don't name chemicals, it's a little mixture of things. And so that's what we're happy. Something makes us happy and suddenly we're full of this wonderful thing. But also our postures change. You know, if somebody's happy, it's shoulders back and everything else, and that's how we sort of trade joy. And if we're sad, we're sort of like shoulders coming in a bit. If we're depressed, it's almost like getting in coming in. Because it works in two things, the chemicals come into your body, and then the body reaction is, well, when I feel like this is how I react. But we all do slightly different things. Although everywhere in the world that's happening, so saying that's a smile. It's a natural thing for our body to do that. And when we're in times of stress, we're actually part of the body boosts up to run away from the predatory animal that we think is chasing us. And the rest of the body shuts down. Anything you don't need to escape actually shuts down, including your immune system. And so when people talk about like a physical illness or I've got an illness or problem or everything, it's never one or the other. It's always both. Even if you break your arm, the brain has to sort out what it's going to do with it. And it sorts out giving you pain, sufficient pain that you can't do anything else until you're going to get a plaster on it. And have you ever thought about this? You're in this terrible pain that you've got your arm, and you go to the hospital and they put a plaster on it, and like 5 months after the plaster on it, it doesn't hurt anymore. It's still broken. But the brain goes, well, what can I do? With a mobilised, it's not really going to harm you. You don't need the pain anymore. Otherwise, it would hurt and hurt and hurt at the moment. So the brain, even with truly physical things, is all part of it. So when we have these feelings of emotion, because I'm going to talk particularly about bad emotion, because nobody's come here today to have a joy switch or something. And I wouldn't be able to ask them. So, particularly feelings that come on, suddenly you're in this sort of, you're on the verge of snapping, you know, you're sort of like, I don't know what to do, and you cry, or you're angry, or something happens. And if this is a regular occurrence with you, then all that's running is a bad program. You've just got a program that finds an association with something. Something that's happened in the past to you, and it will actually switch you into that mode. Because it says, when this happens, I have to do this. And it's a protective system. And these protective systems work on the principle that it might give you pain, or it might give you anguish, or it might give you like a really sad feeling, but the thought is, from your unconscious part of the brain, that it's not giving you anything as bad as a thing that would happen if you didn't feel like that. So even when you get massive pain from your broken arm, it will actually say, right, we're going to end that and turn it off. But if you don't, it won't let you carry on. And we have a certain defender. That's a survival method. I mean, not many of us now get to the point of starvation, but we get that feeling of hunger, and if we ignore it, it comes back a little bit, it rumbles, and a bit later on it's like starts all quite intense. And a few hours later, you can't do anything. You can't even type on a computer because it goes brain stops working, and everything stops working until you eat.
So today's talk is controlling the world of eating.
And that's why I created that in what I do. So some of these thoughts are symptoms. And we have no option but to the chemical good of our body before we even realise what it is, because it's literally an instant. Because if a saber-tooth tiger leapt out at you, you wouldn't have 30 minutes to go, you know, you could build up some adrenaline, like, I need to run fast. So it's instant. The brain stops all the association and goes, what do I need? And it gives you exactly what you need. But the fight or flight mode, or freeze, that's the three elements of it, is something that happens that's really scary, and there's a split second where the brain has to go, do I run? Do I pretend I'm not here and hope for the best? Or do I fight the damn thing? And you're in that mode virtually all the time waiting for that to happen, but nothing's going on in your body until it happens. And then it goes, pick one of the three. And you've got a split second to pick one of the three. Now, if you choose to run, the brain is then going, okay, we're running. We need energy in the legs, we might need a bit of energy in the arm, we might need energy in the body in case of paralysis so we can sort of recover. But we don't need for long, so it shuts everything it can to produce the energy for work, doesn't it? So you've got this burst of adrenaline going around you, but at the same time it says, you might be eaten in a minute, right? You don't need to digest your food properly. We can turn the stomach off for a while, right? And it looks all around the body and goes, well, what can we turn? What do you need if you're going to be eaten in a minute? What can we do that will possibly give us every bit of energy into our legs and arms and everything else that we need? Even your vision will go narrow vision, so that you're running and you're going, right, there's a hole I can draw into the tree, I can draw something I can run behind. Avoiding things as well. And if you stretch on a regular basis, you start noticing that your stomach, your eyes, your immune system won't get affected by it. Because why do you need an immune system if something doesn't even in it? Right? It shuts everything off. To me, this is like being ripped in half. Half of you do it 100 miles an hour, and the other half shut down. Now, let's wait for 30 seconds as I'm going to say to you, go! Right? And then we hide up the tree or whatever, and then it'll come to the center. But I just wanted to say to this, that worry and the things that humans do are not done by any other animal on the planet. You might have a dog that you think worries, but it doesn't. It's just anxious about something. It doesn't worry. It doesn't project into the future the worst possible scenario and then bring it back and live in it. It's just anxious because it got hit once on the phone. It's just like, oh God, someone would hit me again. So we have this little worry, and it's just no good to anybody. So I want to visualise a scenario that we've seen on the planet where the tiger is stalking these antelopes, and it looks at the path and it creeps and creeps it, and it picks one on the outside that might be old or a really young one or it's injured, one that it can chase in front of the corner. All of a sudden, it's all action. It springs up, everything is shattered. The one that chases it runs and runs and zigzags and runs, and the little escapes. The minute it escapes and realises the tiger isn't there anymore, it puts its head down and raises. If it was a human, for the next, or for the rest of its life, it would be pestering all the antelopes going, oh, did you see that tiger came out? And that's what we do as humans. We spend the rest of our life with something that's annoying. Actually rethinking it, rethinking it, rethinking it, rethinking it. series of lessons about life. And if you take it as that, there's not much following. Because something happens to you and you just go, oh, okay, what can I learn from that? Okay, is it overdone with that? Yeah. You mop all the loose ends up. You actually finish that thing a little bit. So the things that bother us tend to be things that are unfinished.
No, it's not.
It's not going to work, is it? Okay, it's all that unfinished business. If you have any element of unfinished business in your head, your brain continues to look at what the reason is. Now, it won't be 24 hours a day, if you can answer, but anything slightly similar comes up, and it goes, ah, here we go again. And it goes round that loop again. This is one that I'm listening. To me, what happens in the brain is you have this continuous loop, and it's always looking for what should I do next, how do I do that? Because your conscious part of your brain, the bit that you understand life with, and you think you understand life with, the bit where you can go, yeah, I know that, is very, very small. It's difficult. In fact, if it was in this room compared with your unconscious, it would be a pinhead compared with the rest of the room being your unconscious. Your conscious part of your brain holds 8 bits of data. So if I told you my phone number now, and then carry on talking, you could either listen to me talking, or you could remember my phone number. But you can't do that. You might be able to remember it if you do it in bigger chunks. So if I go 01526, 832563, that's only 3 bits of data. Right? So you can hold that. You still have a few bits of data left to actually process. But that's how small it is. And that's the bit you think you're clever with. Wrong. Your unconscious part of your brain has 100 trillion data connections. And they can all connect to each other. Any number of them. So it's not even restricted to like 2 at a time. Even if it's 2 at a time, that's 2 times 100 trillion. But if a million of them can connect to tell, that's a million times, a million times, 100 trillion. It's thought that the power of our brain, there's more possible connections there than there are atoms in the universe. This is the potential of our unconscious mind. But, and here's the big book, it can only run the programs it's given. It's perfectly capable of making new programs. So a few things I'm going to tell you today about bad bits, you can reverse it and then use it to make good bits. So, this is our little track. And I lost it. Okay, so it's a 100 trillion data connection. So it runs programs, first of all, the ones you're born with. So everything to do with survival, the heart, the lungs, pH balance, it repairs and renews, it knows everything about the body. It's also very good at language, once you learn language. It's not that language is a thing that's not natural to us, it's language came from how our body talks to the rest of us. Apparently it's got the same phraseology and synapse and all sorts of things. Bits I don't understand. We came first, language came second, language came from us, not the other way around. It's not a foreign thing. So, the body goes, so your unconscious mind learns certain things. So you're born with these things, you don't have to breathe and everything else. We're actually born knowing how to actually step. But we lose quite quickly. If you throw a small child in a swimming pool, it will swim. Very naturally. So we're programmed with lots of things that say, you need to survive out there. You don't have to eat and everything else. And then we even affect our mothers to produce milk to actually help us survive. It's a fantastic system. And then we start to learn things. So as we're growing up, we see what's going on around us and we imitate it.
probably don't know why we're doing it if we start to imitate him. Now, it's great if you grow up in a loving and caring family, because that's what you see, that's what we expect from life. If you grow up with abuse and all sorts of horrible things happening around you, that's how you think life is. And that's what you expect from life. And so your whole perception of things is different wherever you grow up. Now, up until the age of 5, we just absorb all these things. We do very little learning for self. There's some things that some people can't teach us, like walking. They can't particularly teach us talking, they can encourage us to talk and show us how it's done, but we develop that skill ourselves by repetition. And the great thing about kids is they bounce back from everything. So they try and get up, for low. At no point do they ever go, never going to do this walking. I'll give up. They don't do that. So this is going on up until about the age of 5. You're absorbing everything around you as though that is the lesson to learn from life. At the age of 6, those of you who are small kids will recognise this, that's when we get why. So before it was like, you have to do this. And you might think, well, at 6, it's definitely, they need to understand how the program works. So not only do you have to put your shoes on to go to school, but why do I have to put shoes on to go to school? What's the connection between shoes and school? They have to understand that. So they're forming as individuals now that can break away from parents. So from 6 onwards, we actually take lessons on better. We're a bit more discriminative about things. We're actually trying to understand why it is, not just doing it because somebody tells us or threatens us or whatever. So up until the age of 5, so for the first 5 years you're absorbing all this information, and some of it's wrong. But unfortunately, the latest research is that 80% of everything we know about life we learned before we were 6. 80% of it. And because about 99.9% of everything we do is automatic, run by the unconscious, that means 80% of everything I'm saying to do is run automatic by five. Okay? So unless we continue learning processes throughout our life, we are dominated by five. Not in everything we do. And obviously the singers there are later on in the so there's all the new things, but it's still about 80% of everything you learn before 6. So what did you look 5 of your age there? And just work out how old some of those programs are. Now, if you had a computer, which is a little mini folder, you'd probably put it on there and put up with it until it crashes or something, and then you do something about it. But if you have a computer that every day flagged up dentist appointment today, and it's from 10 years ago, and it does it every 5 minutes, and it flags it up and puts it on the screen, so you have to press the cross at the top, eventually you'll get used to pressing it. You eventually get used to pressing the cross, you don't think you're anything about it. But lots of us have an overriding program in the background that keeps playing every day. It plays every day. And we get so damn used to it that we actually don't think that we're doing anything about it. So I recently had a woman, and she made it public what I did, so I'm going to have to say this. She came to Massive Adelaide and knew it on a Sunday. I managed to fit her in on a Tuesday, and she was anxious. For as long as you can remember. Even on the stand, I think up just outside the stand, she was chuffing and crying. She was on a knife edge between anger and this nervous wreck. Totally anxious about everything in life. Couldn't appreciate her kids because every time she looked at them, she thought they'd hurt themselves or whatever. So in her own world, she turned into this little net. And it has led to all sorts of things, lots of confidence and confidence. But it's been going on a while, so she's
turning into a zombie. But the thing is, these chemicals that the body can give you this overwhelming, terrible thing, it's not about having to cope with it, because once the chemical is in the bloodstream, there isn't any much you can do about it. So some people will teach you how to breathe, or do other things, or widen vision, all lovely tricks for if you're in a panic state that you can get out of it. But it's a gradual thing. You've already got into it. So my idea is that you actually go in there and you sort out the thing that's bothering you. This thing that keeps popping up on your screen, you've got to pop up on your screen in a few minutes. If you turn it off, you don't have to buy a program that drops it down every time. You just turn it off so it doesn't pop up in the first place. So this is what I do with people. So the woman went from we found out that they had when she was 9, that's a little thorough. So she had 31 years of living in this terrible anxious state. And 3 or 3 or 4 grams on the tip. And she left there really happy. When I assess people when they come to see me, I really have to tell them their level and quality of life. If they haven't come to see me, what's it going to be like in the future? If you just carry on as you are now. She started off with 1 out of 10 and cried when she did it. Couldn't see it in her home. And in fact, in her testimonial, she said, is that what I'm doing? You have to try things, it wouldn't have any harm. I asked her if she'd be happy with you with 7. She said she'd be happy with 10. And then that. And I said, well, would the 7 be alright? Because I'd like to get to 7. And she said, yeah, that's a very happy one too. She left with an 8, and then wrote me 2 days later and come with a 10. So however long you've had something, that's not the issue. Even though most of the things you learn by repetition, when we learn by repetition, we're actually learning with the conscious part of the mind. So it's the alright. But you understand, it's going to be up to us. When you first learn to drive, there's a thing between the accelerator and the clutch. And it's a really technical thing that's explained to you, because you have to press this one in, put it in here, and then this one has to come up, but your other foot has to go down. But they have to go down and around at different speeds. Now this is crazy. It should be both down and both up. But one comes up and the other one goes down. So you have to keep practicing this to actually get the accelerator just the right level before the clutch comes up and then you set it down. Now, when you first trained it, did anybody do the I bet you 10 quid, nobody's ever caught me out on this. If you go to the car park now, the E car show me how the kangaroo will come up. Right? It's impossible to do once you know how to do it. Because you're comfortable leaving it on your right side, isn't it? Just that point that does that. Because it's quite uncomfortable to do it on the other side. And the engine is really, I don't know how anybody can do it. You don't want to make it a specialist to go through it. But you can do it when you learn. And the thing is, if you let the foot up, you press the accelerator down, and then you drive and you say, now mirror, and you go, whoa! I'm doing this with 1 foot, and this with the other one, and I've never done it before, and you want me to look in the mirror as well? And you can't cope with all three things. But now you're going to tell me, you do that. Why are you putting lips to them? You could. Because all three things are now in your head. You've done it so many times, and when you repeat something over and over and over again, it goes to the back of your head, to the unconscious. And your unconscious is running your heart, your blood, everything else. It's probably dealing with 100,000 things at the same time. So if you give it one more jump, it's fine. Not a problem. That's wrong. It doesn't matter. If it's just conscious, you've got to throw out what's in there to put this new thing in what I think about. So we have to learn lessons about everything. So all of you when you came in the room, you sat on the chair. Unless you live here and come in regularly, you've never seen that chair before. But you knew what to do, you knew your bottom line.
You knew which way around, but you didn't suddenly go to the water if it was the good way around. And the same will happen with any chair in the world. You go up, you know it's a chair, you recognise it's a chair, just because of the shape of it, and you can sit on it. If we didn't have this ability to go, that's what that is, I know how it works, you wouldn't be able to do anything in life. Every morning you get up, you wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know to brush your teeth, you wouldn't know anything. With the word everything here. And while I'm on that topic, there is a guy in the world who actually has 24 hours sun in memory. And he always lives in the hospital. But every day he gets up, he doesn't know what breakfast is, he doesn't know how things work. And if you ask him about tomorrow, he has nothing to base it on. Because he doesn't know, he can't understand yesterday, he can't understand tomorrow. And it's the same how we live, that we can only base our future on what we've already had. Because we understand this, we've already had this, so we understand that. And I've said earlier to a few of you that I've had thoughts in the dream, and I say, I'll take a group of something in the dream, and I'll say, right, let's think of something happy. Just go to the happiest point of your life, and I'll go, I don't know. And it's gender. Because I watch people, I know what people are like, and I watch them, and they start looking for something happy. And it isn't there, it isn't on the radar. How sad is that, that you can't even project yourself into a happy story? And yet, we can change our chemicals in an instant. So I said before, the time to say that you try to look at, you go into a stress state, but you don't have 30 seconds, but now we are days of living. That comes on, but you can also do that for joy and happiness. So if you all want to do that, then. Right, all I want you to do, relax, put your shoulders back, head up, and think of something really happy. Okay, some time in your life with just a happy day. Just think of that. Let those chemicals go through your body. Do all your tests, run into it, just feel so good about that day, that happy thing happened. Okay? Now, we're just going to do a little experiment, because I showed you before, the shoulders up and head, it's happy time. Right? I want you to hold on to that happy feeling, but I want you to go into the miserable body posture. Right? I'm going to go like that. Just put your head forward, and try to stay happy. Come on. Come on, try to stay happy. You might be down, but I'm not going to be sad. So are you really happy? Now, on your day, think of something that's unhappy, but not too unhappy, please, because I've got my tissue with me. Okay? Just think of something unhappy. And while you're there with something unhappy, I want you to put your head back and straighten your shoulders again, and just try and make unhappy. Can anybody do that? Your mind and body are in perfect union. They don't work separately. There's no such thing as it's all in your head or purely physical. It just works together. And when we have stress-related illnesses, it's different in different people. Some people, in fact, I read the other day that ulcers are no longer trendy. When people got stressed before, they had ulcers. Nobody gets ulcers nowadays. They get all sorts of different things. In fact, back pain is took over from ulcers. Right? So your body gives you something that says, whoa, stop it. Stop it, you're being all stressed. If I give you an illness, you're going to have to slow down, calm down a bit. Well, I was trained to do my job. I was already helping people with weight loss. I had a woman come to me with weight loss. And I said, well, what's your level of activity? Hardly anything, about any for 20 years. I do 2 hours a week work, I'm allowed to stop an hour a week and just make it by the end of the day. I think one hour is going to be too good. Most of the time I'm back. And she's only got the weight loss, and I said, well, I'm just studying this thing. I'm quite happy to investigate and see if I can help. I don't know if I can.
And she said, oh, it's going to cost me. I said, no, I really just would like to see that. And over 2 weeks, I saw the animal. And at first it was like, oh, that's amusing. I got a week into it and realised how technical it was about ME, chronic fatigue syndrome, and fibromyalgia. It was just so technical. And I read all these things on it. I was going to the company to help people, but it was like several weeks residential experience. But they were finding for sound in a video of three people who had recovered from ME. And I watched those videos over and over and over. And I spotted that every single person told the same story. And then it came to me. This is not a thought technical. This is your own unconscious going, stop it. If you carry on like this, you're going to kill yourself. You're overworking, you've got no energy whatsoever, you'll push yourself until you can't take it anymore. You'll either have a total nervous breakdown or you'll die of something. You push your heart and make it break. And so what it does is it goes, what's going to stop you? And when it goes to stop you, it's precisely made for you. Nobody else. This is why everybody has different symptoms. Which was a bit of the stalling at first. I was like, I can never get in my head on this because everybody's got the same symptom. And then I realised my drug company would never do anything about it. Because if you all got different symptoms, how can I make a drug that's confusing? So I was looking through the common thread through. And then what I found is every single person that's got related illness like that pushes themselves too much. And so the unconscious that's looked after you whenever possible goes to shut you down. And it shuts you down bit by bit, initially. And then, if you have to get ill with something, so this can be anything from a car crash to an inoculation that seems to take over. There's lots of things, or a traumatic event, even someone dying in life. You then get taken to bed with this sort of absolute collapse. And at that time it goes, oh, this stops them. And it gives you a chance to understand the world still runs without you. Because you like everything you say, you like to push yourself. And you, even if you don't get something done, you're still fretting about it. And so it shifts you down. And it's no different to what it is to the rest of you. If there's anything there, the unconscious will give you something that actually reminds you not to do what it is you're doing. But you see, your unconscious can't afford. So it does all these little tricks and things, trying to get you to slow down, but it can't actually just say, look, hang on, just slow down. You'll be a lot better controlled because you're driven. So you override it. And if it gives you pain, you fight through the pain. And if it gives you more pain, you fight through the mountains. I go on websites and it says, I'm a fibromyalgia warrior. And I go, well, stop it! Because you're actually doing the exact opposite of what you need to do. So I devise all of this. And number one is, and you can think about how this works for your own lives, if there's something in your life really bothering you about it, what I want you to do is accept it. Now that sounds a bit sick. I'm not saying like it. Okay? I'm saying accept that you have what you have. Whatever problem you have at the moment, accept that you have it. Because unless you accept that you have it, you can't do anything about it. And it's a bit like a map. You know the maps of a town you get, you go to a nice city with your feet and everything else, and you stand at the tallest wall, and you go, you are here, and then you look for the cathedral's over there, the castle's over there, museum's here, we want to go there. Now, the sort of idiot that comes up and actually goes there, and put you on the city. So you want to get to the cathedral, so you go, right, just turn right to the town. But if you put it here, you're actually, the cathedral's over there, and you're not going to get there, that's where the cathedral's not going to get there, are and it's the same in our lives. If we don't accept where we are, if we think, oh, I should have been somewhere else, I should have been another person, I
should have still been wealthy because I lost it all. If we don't accept that we are there anymore, we can't set up in the right place. You're all sat here today because of something, everything you've done in your life has led you to be sat here in front of me. This is why I don't believe in coincidence. Everything happens for a reason. If you took a left turn and you took a right, if something had happened this morning that you didn't celebrate, you wouldn't be here. So you're here today for a reason. And that's to understand that there are things in your life that you can't control, but there are things that you can't seem to control, but you can. And you can't control them because you're trying to control them with your conscious when it's an unconscious problem. And so what I'm going to do today, and I'll have to do quick now, so in time, is a little program with you. And this is how you take negative things and turn them into positive. And you don't like to do that, do you?
I've got a couple of them. I'm not going to come today, right? I'll come tomorrow. And I've had some really good circumstances, but I've moved very well. And I know it's not the right move, but I'm about to move the game.
Yes.
I've
been
there like literally 4 weeks,
you know. Okay.
And I've
got a thinking, but I've got a
better situation. But
BGA
told me to move. I've got to stay there
in the minute and
I can make the right move
on
your own.
So, yeah. But next time you need to think more clearly about what it is you want. Because you've got there by... Unless it's a change that you've got there. The thought process that's got you there was the wrong process. Unless you've learned something by it. In which case it's the right way.
Okay. Well,
I don't always say that everything happens for purpose and it's all good. Which, you know, I've died of cancer. Oh, that's a good lesson. No, it isn't. And you haven't brought it on yourself, you just got cancer. It just happens. Some things just happen. Others, though, we attract to us. Because the main thing that not many people know about is that your brain doesn't understand negatives. When we say, oh, I don't want that to happen. The thing you are thinking about is the thing you're concentrating on, and you're likely to go into fruition. I don't want that to happen. It's the same as saying, I want that to happen. So if you're in a relationship and you think, oh God, I hope we don't end up with a slipping door. What are you thinking about? You're thinking about slipping door. You then start going through, well, which one was to move out? What would we do about money? With the kids in the nursery, oh, I wouldn't have a cat and a dog, you know. You're going into that mode. Whereas if you go, ah, I don't want to split up, well, what's the opposite of splitting up? What's the exact opposite of ending a relationship? God's a relationship. And what a relationship like when we start them. They're brilliant! So if you're about to split up, but you don't want to, just go back to what did we do when we first got together? How can I get that back? And your brain will work on every single way it can to get it back how it was. Now, you can't change other people. And I'm going to contradict yourself in a second. We change ourselves, and when we change ourselves, we change how other people react to us. So the woman I helped the other day, who had been shouting and bawling at everybody for 31 years or crying, went home a different person. She went home with a lot of love to give and everything else. She gave the love out and suddenly she got all this love and she didn't know where the hell it was coming from. But she's loving it. It's been there all the time. She's not a different person. She's just got rid of the thing pushing all those chemicals around the body. So, I'm going to do this in a quick, because somebody will want to come in over. Okay, so what I want to do is put your hand in there. Each hand, if anyone's stressed for you, just cut it, and as though you're going to fit something onto it. I want you to visualise the word negative across that hand. Right? In fact, if you go over, I'm going to do this with a binary. Put negative on that hand. Now, what's the opposite of negative? Positive. Right, in a minute you're going to go to positive. So just for a few seconds, I want you to think about negative things. Try not to make it something too difficult, or it's hard to pick away from an early session this week. Okay? But just something negative in your life.
to do it in a colour. Give it a colour. Give it a weight so it's tangible. Give it a texture. Actually feel it in your hand, whether it's smoothy or hard, whether it be feathered, soft. Give it a noise relevant to it. Okay? So you've got sight, sound, you've got weight, you've got the feeling of it. Now project all that negativity into that object now. Okay? What I want you to do is notice, bring your hand near your face, so as though you're putting it back in your brain, and notice that it becomes stronger feeling. And then notice that as you move it away from you gradually, the feeling goes further away. Everybody got that? Okay? Now what I want you to do is take it and visualize it, get it there, get it so that it feels really real to you. And as soon as it's real, you throw it away. Okay. Now, pop your hand up here. And try to project it back on there. Exactly the same. I doubt you can. It will be lighter or smaller or something. Okay. But get it back there. Try and get the same format or change it slightly if you need to. And as soon as you've got it there and you can feel it there, throw it away. Now, we're going to do this really quick. Set it up, put it in the hand, feel it, throw it away. Put it on, 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 throw it away. Okay, pop your hand there. Who can get it back? Anybody? No? All right, it's done. So, there's a simplified version of this. And all it is if you start to think of something negative, if it's bothering, not the slightest of the point, because apparently we have 70,000 thoughts a day, and about 90% of them are negative. So you'd be crazy. But if something's bothering you, what I want you to do is put your hand up as a negative. Right, so the thing I'm thinking about at the moment is negative. If I continue to think about this thing, that is what I am attracting to my life. So I want to know what's positive. Now, I'll just put my hand there now, and imagine positive written across the back of your knuckles. Now, if you do that, you can't possibly carry on with a negative. Right? So if you just think of something negative, pop your hand down and then go, okay, flick it like that means it's gone. You now have to think about what's positive. This will change your brainwaves straight away, because now we're having to fill that little bit of consciousness up with far more what's the opposite of it. Sometimes we can't think of the opposite, so we start putting doubts. So, like, you know, oh, I fancy a chocolate biscuit, or oh, I must have a chocolate biscuit. It's the opposite of it. Well, that's got mustn't in front of it, so that's still a chocolate biscuit. Right? So you still want a chocolate biscuit. And the thing is, everybody knows the secret. Well, anybody knows the secret. Yeah. So the secret is about what we manifested in life. But they miss the secret out of the secret. It's not about what you think about or what you put on a board or whatever. It's what you truly believe and you have feelings about. If you don't have feelings, it has no impact on what you believe. So if you think you're a world-class singer, you go on X Factor, and you might realise you're not at that point, but most of them do, don't they? And I just admire the confidence they get up on the scene, on the stage, and people are not proud of their crap. But somewhere inside them, they think they're brilliant. And because of that, they've got them locked in the door. And yet there's hundreds of thousands of people who sing brilliantly, who don't think they can, so they don't want to sing. The only difference is their thought process. One of them thinks they can, but they can't, and the other one thinks they can't, but they can, and they both can result right. Okay? That's how it works. So, I just want you to catch yourself when you're doing negative thoughts, just pop your hand there, try and do the opposite of it. So that's positive. As soon as you're into the positive, I want you to then visualise it coming into your life. What am I going to do to manifest it? Now, the great thing is, as I said before, you don't have to rely on your conscious brain to do it for you. There's a brilliant time just before you go to bed, just before you're asleep at night, when you're in bed, where you just drift. You get the same in the morning if you wake up and soon as you're on. You're in and out of this sort of nice space. At that point, you'd be talking unconscious very clearly. In fact, anybody want to talk to their own unconscious? Can I go like that? Right, okay.
You really said I've got to say what I've got to say.
I don't know.
I'm sorry.
Right. I'll do that in the next session then. Anybody come to see me for a while? You'll get to talk to your unconscious.
I'm so sorry.
Catch yourself on a regular basis. At some point, you'll notice your hand moves and you'll go, right. So just try and have a quick think of what you just thought about. Because it will be a negative thought. And share it into the positive. Now, has anybody here now with a negative that they can't think of a positive to? Anybody got one? Okay, I've been sitting right here on the road. Thank you very much.